Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, August 16th, 2016. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Goodly.
Goodly, you say. Well, yeah, done, sir.
I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, we take it as we can get it some days. John Bartolaro, how are you?
I am most excellent. Good morning.
That's swell, daddy-o.
Are you most excellent, but are you the most excellent?
Yes.
Obviously. Is there, like, so there's no one who is more excellent than thou?
Correct.
Excellent. Okay.
So you are most excellent as opposed to most excellent. Got it.
Wow.
Thank you.
This is just derailed real quick.
Yeah. Well, the great thing is we derailed and landed right beside the track, so I can get us back on. Hey, guess what, guys? Apple is planning on opening a research and development center in China, and they're going to do it before the end of the year. Tim Cook announced that on his second trip to China in 4 months. What do you think of that?
Brian?
Well, China is this big ongoing effort. Like, I almost wanted to say experiment, and certainly experimentation has got to be part of that effort, right?
We've got
the big investment into Didi.
Right.
Right. We've got 41 Apple stores. I think in 2010, there were four. Something like that. 2011, maybe there were four, and now there's 41. You've got what's the thing that Apple's does? What's the news today?
The news today is that before the end of the year, there will be a R&D center in China somewhere.
That, you know, that represents a significant investment. Of course, Apple has been making those in that specific investment in multiple markets. I think there's one in at least one in India, maybe two in India.
Yep, one for sure. Yep.
And one in, I think Apple's opened up like, or announced that they're opening like three of these. So, I mean, you know, the thing about China is that, first of all, you have this weird hybrid between a command economy and a, you know, free rolling, rollicking, hyper capitalist kind of thing going on, but yet you still have the firm hand of the government on the till, so to speak. And a big part of what the government is concerned about is the government and the well-being of the government and the well-being of the people, and that ends up affecting a lot of the directives that get handed down from on high. And you know, if you're, it's one thing to do business in China. It's another thing to want to do business in China at the same level, at the same level that Apple is doing business here in the States. Mm-hmm. And doing business at that level in China, in many regards, it kind of requires you to be a Chinese company, which Apple isn't.
Brian, the way I look at it is creating stakeholders. When I first heard this news, I thought, they're going through the typical business approach of saying, you know, our success is married to your success, and we're doing things in partnership with your country to help design products, to do research, to employ people, to become integrated into your society. So it makes it in the government's interest to promote that and to continue that. And while you might take a draconian move to somehow hinder sales, you have to take other elements into account when you do that. So as you said before, it's not just sales. It's how are we impacting this company that is working with us and partnering with us and employing our people? That's the way I thought about it.
Okay. And well, that kind of plays into the notion that Apple needs to understand the market that it's in And China's a very different market, and so they need to be deeply enmeshed into that market to better understand it.
And Apple needs the Chinese to understand Apple too, to probably to a lesser extent. But and Apple certainly needs developers understanding Apple, right? And understanding the ecosystem and understanding how Apple does things. And of course, you know, at the same time, Apple is always, there's always tension between Apple's commitment to things like freedom of expression, freedom of religion, that comes in sharp conflict to the control that the Chinese government wants to exert on the free flow of information. So, I mean, you know, all of these things are just like this big mishmash boiling away in a stew pot. And, you know, Apple opening up a new development center kind of plays into all of these things, and it helps make Apple a little more of a Chinese company, at least in terms of being in China.
I can see where that would be a smart move, well, on many levels. I mean, they're getting research and development in the country. They're getting the perspective of people that they wouldn't have had before. And they're learning more about the Chinese culture and how the Chinese marketplace works. So, I can see where this would be a good move for Apple. I'm waiting for someone, it's probably about to hit the internet right now, but waiting for someone to write an article saying, this is Apple's way of secretly catering to the Chinese government's demands for backdoors into software, and I don't think that's the case. But someone's going to write the piece.
At some point, at least it'll be a line item in some drive.
That's why I think of the word stakeholder, is because two entities have mutual interests and mutual things at stake. And if you can figure out what those things are to the mutual benefit of both entities, then it really isn't what you might call a bribe or a concession. It's just good business. It's just understanding your customers and working with them.
I don't see this as any kind of effort towards kowtowing. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, it's always fun to actually be able to use that word in its proper setting.
Oh, I just used it on Friday in Particle Debris. It was great.
See, this is why you both rock.
I don't think this is just about Apple better being a Chinese company, learning more about China. And I definitely don't think it's about this kowtowing to the communist government there.
Yeah, in the United States, Apple needs to be an American company. In India, an Indian company. And in China, a Chinese company. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and in each of those countries, that means a different thing. Like, Apple in China, Apple has headwinds of both a different culture and this command government, right? That's involved in, like, you know, so many everyday aspects of everybody's lives and, you know, the daily existence of companies. You don't face those same headwinds in India, but you have this completely different culture. You have a completely different way of doing business, especially when it comes to cell phones. It's the culture is what is the deal in India, but in China, you've got the government and culture and expectations. And then, of course, all of the extra business that comes along from the fact that China both thinks that it is the greatest country on earth and is mad that it is not, like this, you know, dueling thing going on there. So, I mean, you know, it's being a local company means a different thing in every locality. And fortunately, Apple has the resources to possibly get there.
I think this could make Apple a less arrogant company. Every once in a while you hear about negotiations with banks overseas or Apple Pay issue or some local issue with regard to Apple. And I think this is a process that is widening Apple's horizons and and can help make them more graceful in their negotiations with companies and foreign governments.
Yeah, could be. Hey, we have more I want to talk about today, so I'm going to move us on. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is the iPad, and specifically the iPad Pro, and the place where it's fitting into our technology world. And this comes from the ad that that Apple ran recently that felt very much like they were showing off the Surface tablet. And now Microsoft has responded with an ad that mocks the iPad for Apple just saying, hey, look, it has a keyboard. And so now we have the iPad in this interesting place where Apple has been promoting it as this great tablet, but now is also trying to promote it as a computer. And John, you were kind of mulling over what that meant, and so I'd like to get your take.
Yeah, how quickly we forget about the attitude we had about the iPad being pure when Steve Jobs talked about how it didn't need a stylus. We have 10 of them on our fingertips. And Apple was very fussy about, you know, not selling keyboards in the store with the iPads. And it was this pristine new way of doing things. And we sort of got our heads wrapped around the idea, and I was one of them, that the iPad is a new way of doing things with the touch interface. And everything went swimmingly until, I think about 2012 or 13, when the rate of sales growth turned negative. And it's been that way ever since. And then for the last couple of years, we've been thinking about and writing about, well, why is there a decline in sales in the iPad? And there's been all sorts of explanations. The update period is not as quick. Innovations are harder to come by. iOS is slowing the system back. Security considerations have kept it from being a more powerful tool. And if you need that, then you go to a MacBook. All sorts of things have been discussed. And I've written about that myself a lot. And so the idea was that Apple had to breathe new life into the iPad to keep this sales curve from going towards zero in 2020. And so we've seen Apple doing things to improve the appeal of the iPad. Much faster processor like the A9X and the 12-inch iPad Pro. Slide over, picture-in-picture, the remarkable and beautiful pencil. Apple now sells a keyboard. And in that process of trying to improve the iPad, it seems to me Apple has kind of created a mishmash of elements, trying to make it more of a computer and trying to make it more appealing to people who might not need even a PC.
So, and in the process of so Apple's that, trying to make it a toaster fridge.
Yeah, and in the process of doing that, they've sort of come around to the original Surface idea, and they've sort of diluted the original purity of the concept of the iPad. And this new Microsoft commercial kind of pokes Apple about that, kind of burst their balloon of the conceit that this is a computer that can do everything you need it to do. And it seems to me like Apple sort of wavering or wandering about how to breathe new life into the iPad, given the constraints that it already has, the design, the security, the sandboxing, how iOS operates, and so on. So I'm kind of mulling over in my brain, you know, whether this is the right approach, whether this will lead to, you know, the two-in-one thing that was previously dismissed, but, you know, could have new life breathing into it. I've been reading more and more stories about people who are accustomed to touching their screens, and they pick up a MacBook and they try to touch the screen and nothing happens. And so there's this multiple phases of evolution we've gone through, to the iPad is perfect, it should be just the way it is, to now the iPad needs to be more of a computer with a keyboard. And, you know, where are we headed? And I'm still working that out in my head.
for me, I find it interesting that that people are saying, well, we have the iPad and then we have computers. To me, the iPad is a computer. The iPhone is a computer. Apple Watch is a computer. These are all computers. They just focus on different tasks and interacting with our data in different ways. And so I'm wondering, is Microsoft trying to push the, hey, Apple is trying to say the iPad is a computer thing with their ads when Apple isn't actually doing that?
But that is what Apple has.
What they're doing.
Come on, man. The commercial, Balderdash. I'll aim that at Jeff. I usually aim it at John. Apple spent years deriding Microsoft's approach to tablets. It spent years deriding it. Mm-hmm. The toaster fridge concept, we think that, trying to do two things at once and leaves you with an unpleasing product and, you know, all this stuff. Stuff, by the way, that the three of us certainly bought into, and I think that our listeners and readers bought into it too. Apple fans bought into it. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And never stick to your guns to the point of being wrong, which somehow seems relevant in today's environment. But never, I'm not actually saying that we should ever stick to our guns in the face of being wrong. But Apple spent years deriding it and then puts out a commercial that looked like a Microsoft Surface commercial. That was our exact reaction to it. Mm-hmm. And Microsoft is dinging them for that. And quite frankly, Apple deserves it. I mean, you know, so what, too? Because, again, don't stick to your guns when you're wrong. If it turns out that we need toast fridges, Apple better make the best toaster fridge on the planet.
Apple mm-hmm. has this clarity of vision that didn't work in the marketplace in the long term. And so now Microsoft seems to be the one that has the crisper vision as Apple flails around in my mind a little bit, trying to figure out how to breathe new life into the iPad sales. Because didn't Tim Cook say that the iPad, and I forget the exact phrasing, was something like our most fundamental vision of the future of computing or something along those lines? And I mean, there was even talk that the iPad sales would equal and then swamp the PC sales of the future, and it would become our future device. That it turned out not to be the truth in the marketplace.
Oh, wait. But the iPad vastly outsells Macintosh.
Oh, yeah. But total PC market, let's see. I don't remember the numbers.
The overall tablet market is certainly a significant chunk of the PC market.
So back to Jeff's question, if we have all these different tasks that each device is good at, the question is, do customers have the luxury of buying a different device for different tasks, or are they more inclined to say, look, I only have so many dollars in my pocket and I have these tasks to do, I'm going to pick the device that's most suitable for that? And a lot of my readers are telling me it's a MacBook.
I can see why for many people, if they can afford a single device, they're going to go for the one that gives them the most versatility for the things that they need to do. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, that's not going to be a tablet. So sure, I can see why there's a lot of people telling you that they want a MacBook. All right, so now my next question, before we wrap up, because we are almost out of time. Since we've seen this shift from the tablet is the be-all end-all for the future of computing to we're seeing more laptop-like features creeping into tablets, are we heading to a place where we'll be back to one type of mobile device again, and it will be essentially a touchscreen laptop of sorts?
It's a good question. If Apple follows through on the rumors to put ARM processors in MacBooks and use some sort of Rosetta technology to run x86 binaries on an ARM processor, then you might actually have the ability to switch back cleanly between the two operating systems as needed. That's a thought that keeps cropping up in my head.
You know, I I suffer from the luxury of having an iPad and a MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really need the two to mix. I don't use my iPad the same way I use my iPad Air, and I also don't use my iPad Air the same way I use my iPad.
Sure.
So, golly, you know, I'm not clamoring for that toaster fridge myself. But there are people that are. I've read compelling and well-written arguments calling for Apple to toaster fridge up that iPad. And I you know, so I don't know.
All right. So then I'm going to wrap up with a question, and I'll answer it first, since I'm totally putting you on the spot with the question. If you had to choose a single device for all of your computing needs, would you be going with an iPad, or would you be going with a Mac? And for me, the answer is I would be going with a Mac, even though I love the iPad and would hate to give it up. But if I can have only one device, I need the one that lets me do as much as I possibly can, and that's going to be the Mac.
I would echo that exactly. It's exactly how I feel. I use the iPad as a supplement, but my life is in the Mac.
Brian? In a world where I am suddenly having my choice of devices taken away from me, I choose Tepuku.
I hadn't even thought about option number three like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally a viable option.
There's no way. I use my iPad all the time. My MacBook Air is key to the specialized tasks that I use it for.
Yeah, I would hate not having my iPad Pro, because that's such a vital part of what I do all the time now. But there are some tasks that I do that today are so cumbersome or not even possible on an iPad that I would have to choose just the Mac. And then I'd be really, really sad I didn't have an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same here. All right. Well, on that happy note, we have to wrap up. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
You are most excellently welcome.
That's sweet. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.